Star Visitors. Dr. Richard Boylan is next. Get ready for an incredible story right here on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Richard Boylan, Ph.D., behavioral scientist, anthropologist, university associate professor emeritus, certified clinical hypnotherapist as well, a consultant researcher, a puppet, a poet. His career has also spanned 4 decades of service as a psychologist and social worker. Dr. Boylan is a consultant to Star Kids and Star Seeds, seeking to understand their origin, identity, and mission. Author of, how many is it now, Richard? At least 3, isn't it?
4 books and 1 in writing.
Excellent. What's now the one in writing? What is that going to be on?
The title is fairly explanatory. It is Star Visitors.
Sounds like you're writing it as we speak, Richard.
the Human Star Nations Connection. I keep editing the title, and the subtitle is The Key to History, Current Secrets, and Our Near Future.
When you were on with me on a full show a couple of years ago, we talked about star children, and I took your test that was on your website, and you are convinced that I'm one. And explain that to all of us again, would you?
Do you remember your score?
It was pretty high.
Yeah.
That's
indicative, and you may remember, my friend, there was a time when we were both at a UFO conference when there was a pause there, and I chatted with you on the side, and I whipped out my dowsing rods and measured the bioelectromagnetic field your body generates, and I have found through extensive research that ordinary humans throw a field out of about a foot from their body, a foot and a half at max. But that star seeds throw a field out that is measured in yards, and yours was several yards out. And I said, bingo, right there, and I invited you to take the Star Kids Star Seed Identification Questionnaire, which when you later on had a moment, I guess you did, and you found a high score. And that, again, there's 54 yes-no items on there, very simple. And I found that once a person gets 16 or more, it's a pretty lead pipe sense that they are starseed because they have so many characteristics that are not typical of the old school human that it points to their being starseed.
Well, I got to tell you, Richard, it was fascinating when we talked about it, and I think you said, if memory serves me, that my mother might have been one, right?
Well, it often is generational, and if some of the things that are true about you, let's say you know, some of the psychic abilities is one of the things that kind of stands out for people, or knowing knowing the future, being able to affect things from a distance, all that sort of stuff. If you see that in a parent, you can reasonably assume that they were too. Often that generation, because of the culture in our society that doesn't look at this, you know, very favorably, we have this kind of pseudo-scientific culture that poo-poos anything that can't be seen in a test tube. And, of course, there's a heck of a lot of reality that doesn't show up in a test tube. These folks of the previous generation tended to be a bit closed-mouthed about what they could do, and some of them out of humility, too. But the kids, now grown up like yourself, saw enough stuff around the family to realize there was something going on there. And then when they see it in themselves, they can reasonably draw the conclusion, hey, we've got a couple generations of this stuff going on.
We're going to talk about an incredible story tonight with you, Richard. For new listeners, tell us a little bit more about you so they will understand where you're coming from here tonight.
Okay. Through 3 decades of my professional career as a psychotherapist, psychologist, a clinical social worker, and university instructor, university professor. I was a mild-mannered, ordinary citizen, not particularly out of the main cut of things. But in 1989, I started having people come into my office who, after we dealt with their garden variety problems, let their hair down a little bit more and said, this one's going to throw you, Doc, but I had somebody come into my bedroom the other night that wasn't from this planet. I had followed the UFO phenomenon long enough I didn't throw them out or write a commitment paper to the state mental hospital. I heard them out, and as having dealt with them, I'd already assessed that they had basic psychological soundness, maybe a little neurotic problem here or there, but they basically had all their marbles together. And as these cases piled up, I said, hey, there's something going on here. And so I began to investigate it, and as I got to deal with people who've had these encounters with star visitors, I followed them over the months and years. I found out they went on to have children after these encounters who were much more advanced than the ordinary kid, and after I saw enough of these instances, I said, hey, there's something going on here too. These people aren't just being visited. They're being changed, and their children are being changed by this experience. And so I started to focus on the star kids, as I call them, the kids whose parents had their reproductive material borrowed and gene spliced with some star visitor genes and put back in, and then they go on later to have a kid that's much brighter, grows up faster, has double handfuls of psychic abilities, etc. And I say, we've got a new type of human emerging here that is a quantum leap above the Homo sapiens sapiens that ordinary humans have been in the past. And then I go beyond that to come to know from a variety of angles, including my own experience, but the reports of many, many hundreds of credible people I've dealt with, that the star visitors not only are occasional visitors, but I have learned from government insiders and people in the know, and in some cases from the star visitors themselves, that there are several races that have a resident population on Earth. And then we go beyond that to learn of another group of highly intelligent races that live on under the Earth and are not from the stars. They are native to Earth. And in some cases, most cases, their history goes back a lot farther than human history.
Are these reptilians, as some people have theorized?
No. Okay. These are intelligent races, much more advanced than we are technically. One of the most familiar of this group is the Sasquatch, or Bigfoot, or Yeti, as they're called, who aren't just hulking ape men, as some people might think. They're highly intelligent, telepathic, psychically quite adept individuals who can make themselves disappear and can go through into a hillside through portals and manage to not be ever caught. There are tall, very human-looking giants. We might call them up to 8 feet or so or higher, in taller in height. And there are a group of intelligent folks called the Sea Italians who live in a handful of cities on the ocean floor, in advanced dome cities on the ocean floor. There are a race that have gills and a race that you don't see very much at all, but have what look like very large wings. It's possible those are stiff capes, and they use technology to fly, but they have that kind of appearance.
Now, these large winged creatures, are they what some have called Mothman?
It's possible that could have been a misidentification, but these are human-looking individuals who just have that either a very stiff cape coming off of their shoulders or wings. I've heard different descriptions of what that is, but somehow they managed to be able to fly, and they're actually the basis for the Thunderbird legends that the Native Americans have in their lore. Then there are the wee folk, who, it turns out, are not just mythological, but the elves, the gnomes, the dwarves, the leprechauns are real folks. They just happen to be quite diminutive in size, and they're pretty elusive. All these people have gotten rather appalled by the human race and our violence and environmental destruction, and they've generally given us a powder and live underground or under the sea and keep at arm's length and only emerge when they think things are very, very safe and only with a person or two that they think can't possibly be harmful. The last category of domestic or native non-human intelligent races are what our ancestors called the fairies, but these are not like Tinkerbell. These are actually the orb folk, those gently floating, luminous circles of energy that are intelligent and self-propelled and go about observing things and show up in more and more these days in people's photographs, even though the person themselves didn't see them in the scene when they developed the film. There it is.
Now, Richard, many past civilizations and even current ones have talked about these kinds of entities or civilizations as well. When you put this all together, this based on research, gut instinct, what?
Well, it's information from some of my close associates who are getting this information from these individuals who've approached them and said it's time for the human race to get beyond vague mysteries and debated legends and realize this is fact. They've watched as a people have marched from ignorance to recognition that UFOs are real and then that there's people inside of them and then that those people inside of them actually land and walk up to humans and have communications, and to go beyond that, and there's interaction and work with our genetics so that we are experiencing a massive upgrading in our genetic makeup. And finally, they say, you're ready for maybe the last shoe to drop here, that besides all these star races out there that come by to visit, you need to know that there's a handful or two of intelligent races that live right here under your feet. But after you've messed up, not just in current recent history, the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki and all of that, but all the way back to Atlantis and Lemuria, when those civilizations crashed and burned, they've watched this and they decided leave those crazy humans on the surface and to live underground and seek a more peaceful existence. But they're not totally washing their hands of us. They would hope we would come to a point where we grow up enough that it would be possible to have peaceful dialogue, intelligent dialogue, and to learn from them enough that maybe we could straighten up and fly right and they wouldn't have to hide out all the time.
Tell me about the entities that reside in the sea. This fascinates me, Richard.
These all of these races are highly advanced technically. They are spacefaring. They go out and have gone out in their own craft to other planets and even out into adjacent star systems. This includes the Sea Italian group, which is the those who live on the bottom of the sea. They have perhaps the least hopeful attitude towards humans of any of the ones that live underground, the infraterrestrials, as I call that whole group of folks.
So these ET sightings that seamen have seen and other people in the sea, is this what they're seeing?
Well, some of the craft, the Sea Italians, traveling, going from their seabed up to the surface and then up in the sky and then out into space and back down, could be misidentified as what some have called USOs. They assume underwater submergible object.
Yeah.
there are some instances where extraterrestrial, you know, star visitor craft take a dip in the ocean just for, you know, sampling environmental conditions in the sea. But some of that traffic is these underwater folks going back and forth.
That is something. Well, we're going to get in very shortly about the some visitors to this planet, which is an incredible story by itself. But are these beings known to each other, even though most humans may not know about it? Do they all know about each other?
Oh, yes, and they have contact with the star visitors, too, the star nations, to speak of the collective of the intelligent races that are visiting us from space in an organized way. They have some dialogue between each other, and they're very much aware of each other, both on a meeting out in space basis and on a telepathic communication basis. So they're aware of each other, and Star Nations has even allowed these infraterrestrials to, in some cases, to go to other star systems and investigate planets that are suitable for habitation. And some of these infraterrestrial races have set up communities on suitably habitable planets. So that's going on, too.
Now, Richard, when you began to learn about these various civilizations, I mean, did you say, oh, come on now, this is not possible? Beings that live in the ocean, those that live in caves and deep within this planet. I mean, how did you first react to this?
Well, certainly the lost leader, if you will, was the Sasquatch, for which there's just so much evidence, physical and anecdotal reports, that it does require a leap of faith to realize the reality of that. And I've had an associate who, a couple of people I've talked to who have met them and communicated with them. And I know these people are beyond reproach in their truthfulness. And so I had no trouble accepting that. I've heard anecdotal reports about the giants living underground and the fact that one of my associates who's had some communication directly corroborates that, helps fill in that gap. The ones under the sea, I've heard some indications of that from some government insiders I've talked to, and some vague allusions in the past from some of the star visitors you know, sort of, you'd be surprised who's living on Earth besides humans if you really knew everything. So, again, I found that not too hard to incorporate in a reality sphere. The wee folk, I must say, I had considered more legendary than evidence of, but my informant has been accurate in everything else, and I see no reason to disregard that, besides which I've had independent corroboration from other folks who've had interaction. And the orbs, I've taken photos of them myself, and I can't tell you, I must have had 100, 200 photos submitted to me by people with orbs in them. And after a while, you kind of see their MO, that they're interactive, and some of the metaphysical students I've talked to, you know, talk to them and say, turn your inner energy field into a recognizable figure, and they make a little happy face or something.
Jeez, it's mind-blowing, Richard. We'll be back with more because he's got an announcement that will really shock you. Yeah, there's about 8 feet of dirt on top of me right now, but I'm glad I'm not lying horizontally. Dr. Richard Boylan, our guest. His website, drboylan.com. I'll spell it for you, DrBoyland. Linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back with this incredible story now, next on Coast to Coast AM. Now, we're about ready to hear an incredible story from Dr. Richard Boylan, and this one is truly a remarkable, amazing story. Some would call it mind-blowing. Some will just simply shake their head. Richard, let's talk a little bit about this and tell us, how did you get the knowledge of the story you're about ready to tell us?
Well, it was the dialogue process with representatives from Star Nation. Let me start from the beginning of that to lead into the historic announcement we're making here on your program. If I may, for just a second, correct that website address. There's no D on the end of my name, so it is drboylan.com.
Okay.
Over the last, the previous year, I've had ongoing, well, actually, for a number of years, I have ongoing dialogue with several representatives from the council, governing council of Star Nation, councilors they're called. And last year, they said, we'd like you to do a survey of how receptive people are to having star visitors come to Earth and stay around, on some project, not just touch and go as they usually do, but they stay around. So I did a survey, online survey, and I put it out there and got some other people to help put it out on other lists. So it got some wide circulation, and the results came back in. It turns out it also went to a place I never suspected would take the survey, and that is the intelligence community. I got the results back from ordinary individuals and tabulated it, and it was overwhelmingly into the low 90% who were favorable to the idea of having some star visitors come and live among us and do their thing. So I reported that to the Star Nation counselors and said, if that's a representative sample, and of course, Mike, my lists go globally, and we heard from every continent. I think it's reasonable to conclude that the average informed person who's had an opportunity to know the UFO subject is receptive to this. And then I heard independently from a spokesperson for the intelligence community that the CIA and NSA set up a project to get some of their people, several dozens from each